Time now for Connecting the Diocese. Connecting the Diocese is a production of the Diocese of La Crosse. Here's host Jack Socha.
Thanks for joining us on Connecting the Diocese. Pretty historic show coming up where we do a direct connection for a real live recorded interview between us up here and Peru. But firstly, what were they thinking, award, and maybe a little idea about lack of cultural and religious sensitivity, goes to a designer, a clothing fashion designer in Nigeria who also services a lot of the Middle East. And this fashion designer came out with a line of mini skirts, one of which included, as a decoration, the coat of arms of Saudi Arabia, the royal family, on the miniskirt. Now, if that wasn't kind of offensive enough, there also is in Islam a very famous phrase in the Quran that would be kind of the equivalent to, in the Christian religion, John 3:16. It reads something like, "There is only one God and Muhammad is his prophet." Well, this person, who apparently does not read the language of Islam, Arabic, decided it was a nice-looking piece of script, so they also put that on the miniskirt. So between the royal coat of arms from the flag of Saudi Arabia and their most holy of sentences from the Quran, both on a miniskirt, this did not go well. It also didn't help that when the designer was informed that there were people who were kind of upset by this, they went, "Well, isn't that kind of dystopian?" Well, nobody was beheaded or no one was arrested, but apparently their clothing line is now banned in the entire Arab world. So the idea is, before you put something religious-y on something you're doing, check it out first, okay? Be back after this. For our listeners in and around the Diocese of La Crosse, I thought I'd take a minute or so to explain to you how we were able to do what you're about to hear, and also how we were able to do it without spending a whole bunch of your money. Number one, we were working during the pandemic using a telephone with a couple of microphones aimed at a speakerphone to do interviews, and the folks at the diocese were saying, can we come up with something better? So we began doing some research on that, and as fate would have it, we were lucky because all of a sudden there were some new programs online that you could link into. And for a very small amount of money a month, probably the cost of a good pizza, you can connect to another computer elsewhere. And as long as both of you have laptops and both of you have microphones and both of you are hooked up properly, you can talk back and forth. And it sounds just about the same as having you in the same room. So that was number one. We managed to figure out how to do this. The software that we're using is reliable, and it is not expensive. Isn't that great? When I talked to Noel, who was going down to Peru, I said, "You'll need to bring down some kind of USB microphone, a microphone that plugs into a laptop." And I told her a brand, which, believe it or not, probably costs less than $25, but is a good one, works just fine for our purposes. And she took that down, and I explained to them how to hook it up. We tested it out, and next thing you know, we're talking to Peru first, okay? The biggest concern was that the internet connection between Peru and here might not be good enough to do this, but it turned out just fine. And the whole thing was done, like I say, a couple of $25 microphones and a monthly fee that doesn't cost any more than a pizza, and we use that for other interviews as well. And you will notice in this description, nowhere did I say, "Oh yes, we also had to hire a consultant." Nope, this is the result of people working together as a team to help make something better for you, the listener. We are good stewards of your money, and I think you're going to enjoy the results. So here we go.
Catholic News and Interviews. This is Connecting the Diocese.
Well, this is somewhat of an historic broadcast in its own way. I can say we are recording live from Peru. Well, no, I shouldn't say we. I'm still sitting here in the Midwest waiting for the leaves to change colors. But we are talking with the folks at Casa Hogar down near Lima, Peru. And this is, not a recording they sent to me and I had to kind of patch it together. We are actually talking back and forth. Katie, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jack. I appreciate it. Thanks for the invitation.
You are sitting at a desk with a laptop computer and basically the same relatively inexpensive microphone I'm using right now, because I suggested you guys get this one. And we're talking back and forth like you're in the same room.
We are, except I'm looking at some palm trees.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah. Now, let me ask a couple of quick questions. We're going to get a little warmer weather this week, but it was like someone flicked the switch and suddenly it went from like really hot summer to kind of chilly, 46 at night, things like that going on. We are moving into fall and winter. You are moving into what?
We're just coming out of winter and moving into spring this month.
Okay. And you're getting a lot of rain, did you say?
No, it doesn't rain a whole lot here. It's just really cloudy in the winter months.
Okay, okay. But as spring hits, you get hot. And so we're both kind of in the transitional period right now. What kind of temperature did you have today, for example?
It's pretty much been 60s lately.
Okay, so we are surprisingly similar at this moment, but it's going to change dramatically real quick. We'll talk to you in December if we do a Christmas show with you guys.
There
we'll
go.
We'll compare notes about that. Katie, what is your position at Casa Hogar?
I'm a long-term volunteer here, so I'm donating my time learning Spanish and just helping out, kind of a utility player wherever they need a pinch hitter here.
And where were you from originally?
I grew up in Menominee, Wisconsin.
All right.
Yeah.
My first radio job was in Menominee, servicing stout. And right there on Lake Menomon, as a matter of fact.
Yes.
In a converted gas station, it was the radio station. And then how many times have you been to Casa Hogar?
I was here just for a day tour in 2009. So this is my second time on campus here.
Okay. So basically, you were here in 2009, you were visiting CASA, and what happened that got you to become a long-term volunteer? How did that work out?
When I came for the tour the first time, as soon as I crossed the threshold onto the grounds, I could just feel the pull, and I would have stayed if I could at that time. And I took a year sabbatical from my job. And I teach English as a second language, and I have a lot of immigrants in my classroom. I teach in Eau Claire Public Schools, and we have 30 languages district-wide, about 500 kids in the program. And so this is just a really great opportunity for me to learn Spanish to be able to communicate with the families back home.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. So you're a teacher by profession,
yeah.
Which is a wonderful job. It's fantastic. I have great respect for people who can get information from their heads into someone else's head. It's critical to our survival, as a matter of fact. But and so you're down there, and when you first walked on to, I will call it the campus for lack of a better term, the first time in 2009, what was your first impression? Did it look like what you thought it was going to look like or anything?
No. Father Walieski really understood the importance of beauty. And so it's one of the few places that has grass for the kids to play on. And I just graduated with my master's from Viterbo University in servant leadership. And we talk a lot about, you know, everyone needs three things, you know, goodness, beauty, and truth. And I didn't realize how important beauty was till I got here. And, you know, being in some very poor areas, didn't realize just how important that was to have flowers and trees and things around until there wasn't any. And so we go to other sites for pastoral care and whatnot. And then it's always nice to come back and to have that natural beauty around us when we get here.
This was something. Did you ever get to meet Father Walieski?
No, I never did.
Yeah, neither did I. I slapped myself silly for this because several times he came up to La Crosse to do, you know, fundraising and other things, having dinners and stuff, and I never went to one of them. And it's kind of like, oh, that's good. This guy probably could be a saint, and I'm going to go, I missed my chance. How many chances do you get to meet a saint? Not too many. Anyway, and Jack, that was yours. But yeah, he was a remarkable guy. And at the same time, you know, you're talking about you had this call when you went there. This is the same thing with him in general with South America. He just had this thing where he just thought he had to go there. And, you know, at first they thought that he was just wanting to go be a tourist. But no, he had this strong pull. And I think you probably have somewhat of the same thing going on. You have been there now how long this time as far as this second trip down there?
Yeah, I got here July 6th, so about 2 months.
Okay, so you're still kind of just getting unpacked, basically.
Yeah, still learning the ropes and all the cultural nuances and language differences.
You know, I was going to first ask you, how much Spanish have you learned since July? You probably have learned a lot more than I would have. But what are some of the cultural nuances that you mentioned that you noticed?
Every culture does time differently. And so kind of reading between the lines of, you know, someone says a time and whether I'm supposed to be early or late or right on time. So just kind of gauging time. And the greetings here are very warm, you know, with hugs and kisses and just very congenial. It's very beautiful to see.
In my extended in-law family, a Lutheran pastor who worked at a church in Washington, D.C. and worked with Liberian immigrants. It was quite an interesting church. They used to joke about what they referred to as African time, because basically they were much more casual about when exactly they were going to get there.
Mm-hmm.
This is like trying to get a repairman on our house these days. Something everybody in the audience can relate to. Yeah, we'll be out there pretty quick to put those windows in for you.
Yeah, sure
you will, buddies. Well, all the other work going on right now, it's impossible to get anything done in exactly the time you expect it to be.
Mm-hmm.
And they are also, because I was an in-law of the pastor, I was, and they loved him as a member of their family, I was included the same way. So this, when you say greeted with warmth, I think I understand what you're talking about. It's really wonderful. I'm curious also, basically, Monsignor Hirsch got a series of very nice carbon fiber guitars donated, and they were shipped down there. And he brought them down with him. They couldn't really ship them. But have you had a chance to hear any music produced by the kids?
Oh, yes, a lot. They're really good at playing, too. At the every holy hour and mass, and they'll just pick up a guitar and start playing outside during free time. They love it, and they're just very gifted. He was a great teacher, and they picked it up really, really fast.
It's a remarkable story because Mr. McPherson, who is a designer, he has basic patents for vibration dampening in both crossbows and in acoustical instruments. And he, frankly, is quite well off, having made rock and roll guitars and all kinds of stuff for people all over the world. And he began designing these carbon fiber guitars. And after he tested one, and maybe it was perfect, maybe it wasn't right yet, he was a friend of Monsignor Hirsch, and he would give them to him to take down there because they would resist the humidity and all that stuff. But it's kind of a charming thing because McPherson is a Pentecostalist. And, you know, it's just delightful that the overreaching concerns for these kids, that, yes, bring them music, was so important to him as well. And someday, now that we know we can do this kind of thing, especially as we get closer to the holidays, I would love to have you bring in some kids with guitars and maybe have them play something for us, okay?
Absolutely. They would love it. They like being recorded.
Oh, I'm sure they do. Yeah. And, it is just, I'm still kind of blown away with this because, frankly, yes, we have cell phone coverage going down there, and that works pretty well. But aside from cell phone and what we're doing with the computer and the internet connecting, which is better than Zoom, this is a different thing entirely. The last thing that was an innovation was something called the transatlantic cable, which is a bit, an underwater cable in the ocean that would, and it didn't get down to Peru, I don't believe. But even making a phone call would have been extremely difficult back then. So here we are chatting back and forth like you're in the next room or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's just great. Can you give me a rough idea of what time do you get up in the morning down there? Do you get up before the kids do, after the kids do, when they do? What all do you do?
Yeah, we have daily mass at 6:15 every morning. So when Father's here, he usually opens the chapel, but when he's gone, then I usually open the chapel about a half hour before mass. So usually up about 5:15, 5:30 every morning.
Yeah, that's early enough for me. I'm more of a 6 a.m. kind of guy. What do you have for breakfast?
Breakfast here is more simplified than in the States. It's usually like a hard-boiled egg, some toast, and they do have some cereal. That was kind of funny. I was trying to figure out how to translate cornflakes and like, oh no, it's cornflakes. Oh, okay. And then the yogurt is more liquefied. So they'll pour cornflakes in a bowl and like yogurt over top of it instead of milk and eat it because the yogurt's not as thick as it is back home. So yeah, more simple.
I understand too. We were talking about the milk program recently and all the pounds and pounds of dried milk that gets shipped down there, and not mm-hmm. just to Casa Hogar, it gets disseminated. But mm-hmm. there was some talk about them making their own yogurt. Are they doing that now?
If they are, I'm not aware of it. It's possible. Okay. I can check on that.
Yeah, they were just talking about them teaching them how to make their own yogurt. I guess this is constant idea of simplification, economy, and also kind of a cool thing to do. Give somebody some responsibilities. There was a guy there who was baking bread in the morning a mm-hmm. couple of years ago, too. He would get up before everybody else did and bake a whole bunch of bread. And then he would go to high school. And then in the evening, he would study for his college degree via the internet. Very, very, you talk about driven. Just remarkable. So after mass, you have breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
What's the next thing you do?
Then I go into a family, and I'm stationed in the Obrero family every morning, and I work with the kids there. I might help with an English class, might help with, like, the one child is in speech and language therapy, so help him practice the sounds and tongue placement. Just support teachers on campus here.
And then the kids get breaks during the day. Do they go out and play soccer, football, soccer? What all do they do?
Yeah, most of them are, there's three shifts for school here. So most of them go right away in the morning, and then they come back around, I don't know, between 1 and 2, 2:30. And then the next shift goes in for class. And then there's a night shift too. But most of the kids are right away in the morning when they're fresh for the day. It just kind of depends on when there's space and which schools have room and that kind of thing. So yeah, lunch is a little bit bigger meal. We have a great cook on campus, Bambi. He's been here. He actually was a little boy and served for Father Walieski. So that's kind of fun to have that connection here.
I bet you he's got some stories.
Yeah.
And what kind of lunch do you, I'm just curious, this is kind of a day in the life, as I was explaining before the show, kind of a meet and greet, because we haven't had a chance to talk to somebody on the ground there while it's all freshened around them. What do you guys do for lunch?
We have rice just about every day and some kind of vegetable and some kind of protein, like beans, usually beans, different kinds. There's a lot of different kinds of beans. And some kind of meat, like a chicken or a fish or a beef, that kind of thing.
Basically, my wife and I are, in part due to some allergies in our family, we have to avoid what they call factory food, pre-made packaged stuff, because there's a lot of stuff in it that emulsifiers and just stuff that really isn't even necessarily food. And it sounds like you guys are eating pretty much whole foods down there.
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. For sure.
Well, that's good. Yeah, that's very healthy. That's really, you know what you're eating, basically, as well. It looks like chicken, but, that kind of thing. How many teachers are down there now?
They're looking at hiring some more. There's 8 families, and then every family has a husband and wife team that the children call teachers. So there's 64 kids here on campus, and then there's the 8 families, so about 16 teachers. And then there's assistants that help out, because every teacher gets 2 days off every week to go recharge their batteries with their own family. So then there's 2 assistants that go in then and support on those days off.
I see. Yeah, we've had numerous conversations over the past 10 years with Monsignor Hirsch and Father Sebastian also. And to briefly recap, to save us some trouble, Father Walieski was deeply impressed by the movie Boys Town. And it was the idea that you want to create a place for these kids who don't have families that as closely replicates a family unit as you can, because they need to experience that kind of unity of a family. If they don't, they're missing a component of their life. And so when he got Casa Hogar going, this is the format he used. And also, these family groups, roughly how many kids are there in a group with the two teachers, the two family leaders?
8 children.
Okay, so you've got 8 kids, which is not an unusually large family, with a pseudo mom and dad, who are teachers, who are comforters, who are disciplinarians, who are all those things. And it teaches them family structure, which is critically important these days. And for some cases, these kids came from families where there really was pretty much dysfunction. And so this is a stability that will be with them for the rest of their lives. And this has worked out well. My understanding, again, this is from Monsignor Hirsch, was that some other orphanages, not only in Peru, but around the world, have looked at what Casa Hogar is doing and make some efforts to consider replicating it. I don't know whether you know all about that kind of stuff since you've been there since July, but it's quite a program. It's quite a program. The Diocese of La Crosse takes a leadership role in a lot of stuff. Just last week, we were talking about the Deacon Formation Program, both for the permanent diaconate, but also for the seminarians who are moving on to priesthood. And there's at least 2 other dioceses that send their people to the Diocese of La Crosse because we've got the system worked out very well. It's very interesting how the Diocese of La Crosse tries to set certain standards that people look at and go, hey, that's a good idea. And they're more than happy to share it with everybody else. So that's very nice. Do you stay on the compound a great deal? Do you go outside much?
Yeah, I stay here most of the time. We go offsite to other orphanages and do pastoral care. So during those times, I'm always with, you know, Father Hirsch or you know, other members of the team here. So yeah, pretty much just right here.
Mm-hmm. And Father Hirsch was very instrumental, especially during the pandemic, in getting more oxygen-producing facilities and bottles done locally, because they noticed there were people who needed oxygen and couldn't get them. And I keep hearing these stories about, you know, he gets a lot of donations of bread and things like that, more than you guys can use. And as he goes to celebrate Mass at another orphanage, he gives out bread along the way. You know, he sees somebody on the side of the road who, here, have some bread, that kind of thing. So this is not like you guys are separate and completely isolated from the rest of the environment. How much communication do you have with the other orphanages?
It's weekly. We go to Caritas Felices 2 times every week, and then Cenáculo is another orphanage. We go once a week for sure. And if things arise where they need water or things like that, we'll make an extra trip.
Well, that's a good question. How's your water supply doing? Years ago, this is probably before you were even there, they were having a terrible time with water, getting the machinery to pump it and do everything. And apparently they had to spend a fair amount of money to get some kind of a filtration processing system to make water available right there at CASA, as opposed to trucking it in. Is that thing still working out pretty good?
Yeah, the water's filtered great. We haven't had any trouble with water. Yeah, like Caritas Felices, they don't have a filtration system. So we'll bring them jugs of water when we go, and when they run out, then they have to boil it. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, you guys are so fortunate. And again, you know, this stuff costs a whole bunch of money, but people, when they heard about it, they got generous and helped out. And over the years now, you have incorporated a lot more technology. Fortunately, the internet system that is available to you in Peru is pretty good, which is wonderful. We would not be able to do this, I don't know, 5 years ago, and certainly not 10 years ago. We had never even thought about doing it. But now, how much technology online stuff are you using in the classes?
There's Wi-Fi in every class, in every family, in the library, everywhere on campus, and the kids use it. They'll have virtual classes too, which is just great for night, because it's dangerous to go out, you know, at night. So it's more safe to be here having your class virtual. So it's worked out really well.
It was very essential during the pandemic. That was a remarkable time when everybody was locked in, and they almost had like an airlock. You know, you couldn't get in or couldn't get out without passing through a certain thing, because they did not want the virus to get in, because they knew it would be devastating to do it. And during that time, the virtual classes and all that were really pretty exciting things. See, I love talking to Monsignor Hirsch when he's up here, because I learn things. He tells me all about the structure of what's going on. But I am curious, do you get a day off? What do you do on your day off?
Yeah, I do get a day off, and I like to go to the beach. This was my first time seeing the ocean down here, so it was pretty fun.
And I'm going to ask you, I'm purely ignorant on this. Which ocean is it?
Yeah, no problem. It's the Pacific Ocean. We're about a mile, I would say. Yeah.
I'm an East Coast guy. I was raised with the Atlantic, and then when I went to school in Santa Barbara, I was excited to be near the ocean. And I was kind of disappointed because it looked different than the Atlantic. It was like there was a cliff, and there it was. And you know, you could be half a mile away, and you wouldn't know it was there unless a fog bank came in. But what are the beaches like?
I've just been to the local beach here, San Pedro, and there's the Humboldt Current, which comes through, which is why Peru has penguins. So it's the water is more cold because of that Humboldt Current.
Okay, so I did not know that there are penguins in Peru. Mm-hmm. See, you learn something every day. You know, this is good. And is the water too cold for you to go in the ocean and enjoy it?
We go in anyway. We don't like do a lot of swimming with the undertow, but it is fun to just play around in.
And are the penguins right there on the beach with you, or what are they?
No, there's other wildlife, birds. We got to see some whales one day. That was pretty cool.
I was having this image of people sunbathing with penguins around them. That was That would have been great. Are there any offshore drilling rigs or something like that in the distance that you can see, or is that elsewhere?
That might be elsewhere. There's a really neat like rock formation. It looks like a huge whale. That's what's kind of cool.
Yeah, in Santa Barbara, they were offshore, and they had these offshore rigs that were lit up at night. And this friend of mine came to visit who had never seen them before, and he goes, "It looks like a little piece of New York floating by." That's just crazy. And then the kids, how many hours a day do they have free time?
Well, when they come home from school, they have homework that they work on right away with their teachers and assistants. Mm-hmm. And then after homework, there's usually it's like an exercise class on campus where they get to run around and do different stations and keep their bodies fit. And then usually they eat together as a family. And we'll have a holy hour usually. So we keep them pretty busy.
Yeah. Well, you have to. Yeah, I mean, this is part of the structure, that there's so much stuff to learn, so much stuff to do. And is there a particular day of the week that is more casual than the rest of them?
Yeah, weekends. Saturdays, they'll wake up and do all their chores for the weekend, you know, get their shoes scrubbed up and, you know, for the next week. And then Sunday is more laid back. Usually families will come, like relatives of the children, and come visit. And we have a playground here on site, so just kind of have a little picnic or whatnot. So that's always kind of nice.
Are there pets, gatos and gatitos? That's cats and kittens for the rest of you folks.
Yes. Yeah, we have a house dog named Blackie, and we have two cats. And we did have a litter of kittens. They just left the house a week ago. We were able to find homes for all those kittens. So, yes, we do have some animals here. Oh, and a big, huge tortoise named Melvin. So he just kind of roams freely around.
You're not getting these Peruvian names. What was the dog's name now?
Blackie.
Yeah, Blackie and Melvin. These sound peculiarly North American.
Right.
Usually, here comes Melvin.
Yeah, they call him La Tortuga.
So. Well, you know, it's important to have animals around. I love dogs. I think they're fantastic. But my schedule and my work things, I'm not around to take care of them, to take them for walks and do all the stuff that you really have to do with a dog. I never had any animals when I was a kid. And when I got married, my wife came with two cats. And so now we have quite a few little orphans who have showed up here over the years, and they brought us a great deal of joy and comfort, and they're funny and they're silly, and you know, they do crazy stuff, and they're very nice. But it's good for kids to be it, because I remember when I had a dog briefly when I was a kid, you know, I got some water out for it, and my mother said to me, "No, run the water a little longer so it's cooler for the dog." And that was a little lesson there, that don't forget that just because it's not you, it wouldn't enjoy water that was a little cooler, you know. And this is, cats need petting and care and grooming, and I suppose Melvin doesn't require a whole lot. What does he eat? Just whatever gets in his way?
Yeah, well, they might feed him like old bananas or lettuce and stuff like that.
And of course, Blackie. What kind of dog is Blackie, did you say?
But he's just a little, he's a really small dog. Short hair, yeah.
A compact dog.
Yes. He is, yeah.
I wonder how he got there. Did someone drop him off, or did he come with one of the kids?
Yeah, one of the director of the program, he brought him over kind of as a therapy dog for some students. So, he's just stuck around ever since.
Yeah, well, that's good. The idea that the animals can be therapeutic. They can be calming. They can lower your blood pressure if you pet them and all kinds of stuff like that. And they can be just amusing. You know, they can be just silly looking things, and they lying on their back with their feet stuck up and, you know, in the warmer weather and all that. But it's just a wonderful thing. I'm just trying to think now, you guys seem to have covered so many bases. You've got the family unit, you've got the teaching, you've got the nutrition, you've got the technology, you've got some pets for them to play with. You've got them taking care of their own clothing and their own shoes and stuff like that. How do they do their laundry, by the way? How many, do you have washing machines there? What all do you do?
Yeah, every house has a washing machine. They don't have a dryer. They have a clothesline upstairs. So all the kids hang up their clothes upstairs, and then they wash out their socks and stuff by hand in the sink. So.
Well, that's good. I know college students who can't do that. Yeah, they're self-sufficient. It's interesting because we take a lot of this stuff for granted, but seriously, in this country as well as in Peru, there's people who they don't quite know how to do basic things. You know, they don't know how to boil water practically for anything, and you know, they keep going to hire you know, some driver to come over and drop off hot food for them. It's very nice. It's very good, and you must have a commercial kitchen there. It'd be a pretty good sized kitchen.
Yes, none of the families has an oven or a stove in the house because all of the food is made centrally. We have a very large kitchen. Yeah.
All this stuff has accumulated over many years. You know, originally the things were pretty pretty basic, and I remember again this was back. I think Father Walieski may still have been with us with this, but they mentioned that in the bathrooms in Peru, in many households, it was not customary to have a fold-up, fold-down toilet seat. I don't know why, but there wasn't any. And then, so someone bought a bunch of them for Casa Hogar just to make it more friendly and nicer and a little classier. Who would have thought it? You know, that the inclusion of something as simple as that would make a difference in their relationship to where they were living. All this stuff was added on. You must have... I know a lot of times there was a while back, maybe 5 years ago, when Monsignor Hirsch was saying that the computers they had uneven numbers. They would have Macs over here and PCs over here, and the power supplies weren't so good over here. And has this kind of ironed out now? Are you pretty consistent with you're able to go in and teach and not have a problem with a computer or something?
Yeah, we were short laptops, so we're hoping to get some more this year. But yeah, they pretty much have everything ironed out. We are getting them from the States.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the Peruvian government will allow 2 laptops per person that comes down. So we've been sending them down with volunteers that come and mission teams and whatnot.
Okay. Yeah, the trick is that you can't ship the stuff down. It may or may not make it down there. And I guess you can get power. What kind of, you have 110 or 220 power down there? I don't even know.
Yeah, we have converters, so we can convert the power so it fits the socket.
Wow, you guys have got it all figured out.
Yeah, every house has a converter box, so we're good to go. Yeah.
Do you have much radio music? Do you listen to the radio at all down there? What kind of stuff do you hear?
Yeah, the kids are teaching me all the cool songs that are out right now. So I've been just using, you know, Google to search the songs and stuff, and they're teaching me the dances that go with it. So I'm all ready to go for the quinceañera.
Well, okay. Now, wait a minute. Now, you lost me on that last turn. The quinceañera, what was that now?
Yeah, so culturally, the culture when a girl turns 15, she's considered a woman. It's a very special ceremony. We have a special mass, a special dinner, and then a dance afterwards, and everyone gets dressed up. And it's just she writes a declaration for her life, and there's some really beautiful moments during the mass where she comes in with flat shoes on, and then her father or, you know, some other representative from the family, if she doesn't have a father, will change her shoes out to high heels, and it's just so touching to see all the details of the ceremony.
And so all the young ladies, the 15-year-old young women who are residents at Casa, will have one of these for them.
Yes, they will.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. And the idea that they're continuing these traditions, I am curious, although I'll probably not be able to hear these songs anywhere, but what are some of the pop song titles? Do you know any offhand that these kids are telling you about?
Oh, yeah, there's. I'm still trying to memorize the titles. I've got them written down to try and practice them. But some of the titles are played in the States too, but in Spanish, so no English ones.
The thing is, I have, you know, on my laptop, I have one of these internet tuners where I can dial up practically any country in the world and listen to their music. And it's really kind of discouraging how much American pop music is all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, you go to Tajikistan or something and you put on and they're playing, you know, some pop song from 10 years ago by, you know, the New Kids on the Block or something. No, I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear that. I can, you know, get out my iPod. But there would be fun things to know what their themes are. Are they, you know, my boyfriend's back and you're going to be in trouble? You know, or are they my undying love is for you, and you know, we'll know each other forever, kind of stuff going on. The one song, and I'm just not really in the topic of what we're talking about, but there's a song from probably 50 years ago that was, it's going to be a cold, lonely summer, because he's not going to see his girlfriend for all summer. But I'll send you a letter every day sealed with a kiss. It was the corniest song in the world. Right? I mean, it was just, you know, oh my gosh, you know. Yeah. And I was amazed at how many times this song has been covered all over the world. It was kind of a universal feeling, you know. The boy is leaving for the summer. The girl is going away from school, you know, because school's closed. They're not going to see each other. And I'll bet you there's a version, Sealed with a Kiss is what it's called. I'll bet you there's a Spanish version of that floating around somewhere in Peru. And I'll bet you these kids could relate to it. Of all the corniest songs in the world that you could possibly think of, and this is from 50 years ago, and I'm still finding it with new with new singers singing it. I've heard classical versions of it. I've heard rock and roll versions of it. There's got to be a Peruvian version of Sealed with a Kiss. We're going to have to find that one.
We will.
Tendré que despedir por el verano, pues tengo que partir, te mandaré mi amor, cada día una carta que un beso sellará. Yo tendré un feliz triste verano. Carta que un beso sellará. En los rayos del sol te veré, tu voz escucharé en mi mente, correré tiernamente a abrazarte, pero no, tú no estarás ahí, me tendré que despedir por el verano.
There you go.
Yeah. What are some of the, I don't know, we know there's a lot of cultural nuances that you're talking about. What are some of the things that you looked at with these kids and how they behave and what they talk about that you just say, you know, they're just like our kids back home?
Yeah. So when I'm stationed in a family to watch children, I'll just take last night, for example. I was in the little boys' home, so they're kind of grouped by ages. Mm-hmm. And just like little boys in America, they wanted to arm wrestle me. They wanted to have a tug of war. They pretended that, you know, like the one boy was a horse and they'd ride the horse and they had horse races back and forth across the carpet. I mean, it was just so cute. I got to videotape the whole thing because it just made me giggle how we're just all the same.
Yeah.
I had little brothers.
They sound like they do the same stuff. Do you have much access to video games, or do you hold back on that a little bit?
There's access to video games here, but they're very, I mean, the teachers put limits on it. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's so much
playing outside.
You know, there's a tremendous amount of garbage in video games. It's just, I've never been a gamer. I was an only child. I once in a while played Monopoly with my friend from down the street, but I've never been a gamer. So I'm not that interested in video game at all. But it's good that they're playing games. The kids, the little boys are playing games with each other, you know, as opposed to some character on a screen someplace, because that means that they're having human participation back and forth. We keep hearing back here that some people who grow up very isolated, and this is of course exacerbated by the pandemic, some young people have difficulty communicating not only with adults but also even with some of their own peers, because they're so used to texting back and forth. Do these kids pretty much talk to each other a lot?
Oh yeah, they're not allowed to have cell phones here. Each family has a cell phone where relatives outside can contact their loved ones here. But Father Hirsch does a really nice job of bringing the kids all together and having, you know, those conversations that everyone needs to have, but maybe might feel uncomfortable, or he's just really good about speaking the truth to everyone and having those conversations, so the kids are ready when they graduate for the real world and can, you know, stand on their own 2 feet.
It sounds like we could stand adopting some of these practices back home.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm old enough to have been grown up. I was raised with the television on all the time, you know, but fortunately I had other things going on, theater and, singing and choral groups and other things that kept me in contact with other people. I wasn't feeling isolated. There seems to be an awful lot of isolation going on back home right now, where people are just locked into their own little trip and they don't have to get out much, it seems like. But it sounds like what you guys are doing is perfectly healthy. Exercise, good food, education, respect for your teachers. And I'm sure there's always kids who have some, problems as well, but they are not isolated from the rest of the crowd. There was a kid years ago I heard about who, he was getting kicked out of school. You know, I mean, he was a troublemaker. He just couldn't get along. He was getting kicked out of school. He went to CASA. And eventually, when he went back to high school, he became the class valedictorian. You know, and you hear successes like that, and I'm sure you see successes all the time of people coming out of their shells or are just being happy. You know, I get the impression that you see a lot of happiness there.
Yes, we have a great psychology team here on campus. There's one psychologist for every 8 children or so here. And, Father Hirsch doesn't give up on anyone. Like, he won't let you destroy yourself, and the teachers here understand the effects of trauma on children, and so it's been really heartwarming to see how nobody gives up on you, and they just work really hard, lots of patience and lots of love. It's really inspiring to see.
We find this happening also. I spend a fair amount of time talking with the folks at Catholic Charities, because we're dealing with the changing seasons and the homeless and power cutoffs and things like all these things going on. And we talk with Roberto Porteru, and he talks about how, especially with the homeless people that he deals with, they don't always go after what you might call the low-hanging fruit. You know, the easy people who only have been homeless for 2 weeks because they lost a job. They go after the hardcore, 10 years homeless with problems with addictions and problems with mental illness. And stories are just remarkable that these people, one guy that they worked with him and worked with him and worked with him, and he got better, and they got him into housing, and he got a job, and he was holding the job. And it wasn't the most big paying job in the world. But some months later, Roberto comes in and he's just blown away. He says, this guy that we helped out, you know, he's been working at this minimum wage job. He just mailed us a check for what would be for him a fair amount of money out of his meager paycheck. And he said, I want you to help other people like you helped me. Mm. You know, you just see this happening. You just see people whose lives are being turned around. Now, my understanding is some of these kids are, by definition, orphans. Mm. Other kids, the parents have just said, you know, we love these kids, but we cannot take care of them. Is there a fair percentage of those as well?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I would say the majority.
They're economic orphans, if you want to call it that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The parents say, we don't have a functional household. We're living in poverty. We know that even though we like having the child with us, this is the best deal. And then they can visit them. They can come, every week they can stop by and see how things are going on. Mm-hmm. So it's a chance to... basically, it's kind of like, the old sinking ship where you hand your baby over to the life raft, and you say, this is better than what we're doing right over here. It's a tremendous thing. And the fact that you just don't give up. How do you manage to get enough psychologists to help out?
We have interns that will come who are working on their licenses. So mm-hmm. we work with a university too, nearby to support.
Mm-hmm. I would never ask you to specify any particular person or any specifics like that, but what's the most common trauma that you have to deal with?
Right off the bat, I would say abandonment issues. Mm-hmm. Just depending on you know, like you said, there might be a parent with an addiction issue or something. But we also have a social worker on staff who actually worked with Father Walieski when he started this. Mm-hmm. She's been here for the whole duration of CASA, the whole history. And so she tries to work with the families, too, to get them, you know, school or education classes, work. So she's also there to help them navigate the system as well.
Yeah. The old story, of course, from way back when, and I'm sure it was oft repeated, is that Father Walieski was walking around in Peru at night, and this is when he first got there, and he looked in this alley, and there was a bunch of rustling under newspapers, and he thought they were like rats or something, and they were little kids that had been abandoned who were living, covering themselves with newspapers to stay warm, and he went to back, as he, you know, as they put it, to his own warm bed, and he says, I can't sleep with the idea of these kids out there. And this is where he got going on this whole thing. The idea of being totally abandoned is just a, it's got to be, I can't imagine a more traumatic thing at this point. It's one thing if you're, you know, if your parents are killed in a car crash or something, at least that's understandable. Sad, but very sad, but understandable. But to have, to know that they are still out there someplace and you have been just left, that probably takes a lot of talking to get things going. And how old is the oldest? They move out at 18. Is that the year they go now?
We have a program of life, which is kind of a transition. So, mm-hmm. Once they graduate high school, then most of them move out. We just have a handful that are still here, working through kind of like a technical college degree, mm-hmm. And then they'll be on their own.
Wow, yeah, working for getting a degree. Isn't that great? Their chances of having gotten that degree would have been almost nil if it wasn't for Casa Hogar helping out like that. Any particular things that we just covered? We're still talking away here. I'm talking anyway. Yabba, yabba, yabba. But talking about old pop songs from 50 years ago, which we will find in Peruvian. Okay, ignorant Jack again. What is regular Spanish the native language, or what is the native language?
There's a language called Quechua, which was the language that the Incan people spoke and mm-hmm. is still spoken today in the mountains. But Spanish is the common language here.
The predominant one, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. So much I don't know about Peru. I don't even know what their major agricultural crop is. I see a lot of asparagus from Peru. Do you guys get a bunch of asparagus?
We don't have it on site here, but maybe other places in Peru. Peru has a, you know, with the Andes Mountains, there's a lot of different regions. It's kind of neat. Peru is one of the rare countries that has every single biome of the world in this one little country. Hmm. It's kind of neat.
I didn't know that at all. When you returned there after 2009, was that the first time you saw the gravesite and monument to Father Walieski?
Yes, that was the first time.
What can you describe what that looks like and how you get up to see it?
Yeah, it was the first thing we did here. So there's a tsunami evacuation route, and it's up like halfway up that hill. So that's actually the place where like the whole city will go in the event of a tsunami. And there's a statue of Mary at the top. Mm-hmm. They call it Star of the Sea. And she's overlooking the Pacific Ocean and Father's tomb. And then there's an altar too below the tomb as well. So yeah, we go every week, and sometimes more than once a week, and bring everyone's prayers. They're on our website, if you have a prayer intention, we can bring that to Father's tomb, as he's already through the first stage for canonization. So we're waiting for two miracles, and so we're bringing everyone's prayers to his tomb and praying them there.
Sure. Bishop Callahan went down there a number of years ago on one of the anniversaries of Father Walieski's passing. And that was kind of the beginning of the idea of submitting him for the possibility of sainthood, because he was amazed at the number of people processing up this hill to pay, you know, homage to him, and he just was amazed. I did some very brief editing years ago of his funeral. And I'm sure better versions have been done since then. But, you know, you sat there, and they're after the funeral mass, some people are carrying his casket out, and then pretty soon they're handed off to somebody else, and pretty soon more people show up behind it, and then more people show up behind that, and then a marching band shows up afterwards, you know, and pretty soon it looks like New Year's Eve in Times Square, all for this one man. And the fact that some of his oldest orphans that he saved took turns carrying his casket, it was absolutely remarkable. Absolutely remarkable. And Bishop saw all this stuff going on and was going, yeah, this guy's a saint. We're going to have to do something about this and see what happens like that. So it is wonderful. You know, we got a few minutes left to go. Anything we haven't covered or anything on your mind, any needs that you guys have, for example, that you would like to you'd like to pass on?
Yeah, needs. There was a cyclone here in the spring. Well, I should say in March, in your spring.
Okay.
And so, yeah, we have some roof damage that needs to be repaired. And we do have some electrical that needs to get upgraded. So we have a few things that we got on the list.
All right. And if you want more information on how you can contribute, you can simply go to your own website. And do you have the website address there?
Let's see. I can pull it up. It's www.homeajpm.org. That stands for Association Juan Pablo. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what the M is.
Okay. Well, you know, the thing is also, if you Google Casa Hogar Peru, chances are you will probably not only find the main site, you'll find dozens of YouTube videos as well of things going on there as well, because it's been around for a while now, and it just keeps getting more and more brilliant. And again, particularly in this particular situation, it's very difficult to bring physical things, you can't ship stuff down to Casa Hogar, so you can't ship them clothes, you can't ship them food, even computer stuff, the chances of it getting there intact is somewhat small. And so really, your best way of supporting Casa Hogar is donating online or mailing it to an address that they would provide you. And if you want to specify it specifically, hey, fix the roof, you can do that. Or, you know, okay, let's get your electricity better up. Here's some money. They'll be really good, a perfectly good reason to do it. Again, if you don't get the website address, just Google Casa Hogar, Hogar, Peru. If you want to really get it correct, go Casa Hogar Juan Pablo II. But frankly, Casa Hogar, Peru probably will do a pretty good job. Katie, how long do you think you're going to be there?
For sure, I'll be here till August of next year, so... Mm-hmm. Yeah, a full year.
Going to have a good time. Well, I really want to get back with you guys now that we have this system working, and I'm so blown away that we're doing this. Yeah.
It is
the 21st century after all. But anyway, eventually I'd like to have a day when we can call you guys, when some of the kids, and particularly those who can play guitar and maybe some who can sing, can gather around that little microphone that you've got there, and they can sing something. And especially during Advent and Christmas, you know, for the Christmas Day show, we always have a show special on that falls right before Christmas or Christmas Eve or whatever. Yeah, we can do this. We can have these kids sing. We can have some instrumental music. I think it would be fantastic.
You know, they would love it.
They would love it. All right. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being here. Don't go away. I'm going to just... sign off on this thing, but don't click leave session yet, okay?
Okay.
It's too much fun talking to you in Peru, I'll tell you. I'm thrilled.
All right.
Well, Dr. Jack here. Actually, I'm really not a doctor in any way, shape, or form. I just play one on the radio every once in a while during these public service announcements. We are entering the trouble time for the flu season and also for COVID-19 being out there, because people get back indoors and congregate in stuffy areas where things get passed around. Now, the good news is that there is a COVID-19 booster shot, particularly for those 75 and older. It does work. It will help you. Number two, flu shots. Every year they try to compound something that's a good match for the flu. This one's looking pretty good. You really should get both shots. Yeah, unless you're some kind of hermit living in a cave, this is really important stuff. The second health bulletin that I got is pretty strange. It says that nicotine poisoning in small children is up like 32% over the past year or so. Now, what is causing this? No, you don't have six-year-olds sneaking into a smoke shop and stealing vaping pens. You have people who vape leaving their vaping materials out where the kids can find them. Now, to the best of my knowledge, I don't believe these kids are going, oh, good, there's mom and dad's vaping pen. Let's light it up. No, they're finding the little pod insert things that have the concentrated nicotine liquid in them, and they're eating them. Or at least they're putting them in their mouths to see what they are, and then probably chomping down on them and spitting it out. But by that time, all that nicotine is getting into their system. This is now causing vomiting, increased heart rate, unsteadiness, extreme salivation, all kinds of creepy stuff. And yes, it's kind of widespread happening in Wisconsin right now. So mom and dad, if you are vaping, lock up your stuff when you're not using it. So there's your big report from the fake Dr. Jack. COVID-19 shots, flu shots, and watch out for nicotine stuff left lying around. And I won't even send you a bill for this consultation. Matt McPherson not only gives Monsignor Joseph Hirsch those wonderful guitars for Casa Hogar, he also gave the world something called the Salvation Poem and put to music. Here's Monsignor Hirsch performing it both in English and in Spanish. We'll see you again next week.
Jesus, you died upon a cross, rose again to save the lost. Forgive me now of all my sins. Come be my Savior, Lord and friend. Change my life and make it new. And help me, Lord, to live for you. Change my life and make it new. Help me, Lord, to live for you. Moriste en una cruz, resucitaste con poder. Perdona mis pecados hoy, sé mi Señor y Salvador. Cámbiame y hazme otra vez, y ayúdame a serte fiel. Cámbiame y hazme otra vez, y ayúdame a serte fiel. Cámbiame y hazme otra vez, y ayúdame a serte fiel. Change my life and make it new. Help me, Lord, to live.